Hi everyone, I'm Katie Dawson and welcome to Super Creative, a podcast that delivers candid conversations with inspiring women who are thriving in business. Today on the podcast, I speak to Victoria Harris, co-founder of The Curve, a financial education platform providing investing and finance content to women globally. As well as a website, Harris and her co-founder Sophie Hallwright host workshops, corporate events, and my personal favourite, a multi-award-winning podcast called Raising the Curve. With over 10 years in the investment and finance industry, Vic continued to see the women around her struggle with the confidence to build their finances. Together with Sophie, they created The Curve, a safe space for women to get investment savvy without the noise and confusion. A place for women to learn about investing in a way that makes sense to them and makes sense for their lifestyle. And one of the best things about The Curve is that no question is a silly question. The platform is founded on the idea that if you're asking it, so is everyone else. I am a recent and big fan of The Curve. As a fellow podcaster, I am full of admiration of what Vic and Sophie have created, as well as being the perfect target audience for the content that The Curve generates. As you will hear me tell Vic in this episode, I wish that I had had this kind of information available to me in my early 20s. What often happens with me is that when I discover something new that I'm interested in, I become obsessed and I start talking about it with everyone that I come across like some kind of instant expert. My discovery of the Raising the Curve podcast was no different. After listening to a few episodes, I instantly started parroting back information to all of my friends and acquaintances. What is particularly embarrassing is that when I was editing this episode, I mentioned to Vic that I've been Googling EFTs, which then when I was checking something today, I realised the acronym is actually ETF. Vic was very generous in not correcting me, but it was a clear realisation on how much I do actually have to learn. I'm going to be signing up to the Curve's Foundation of Investing course in September, which, I mean, that's a non-spon mention. No one's asked me to do that. But I cannot wait. I cannot wait to just get my head around investing. Anyway, this is such an awesome chat with Vic. I loved hearing all about her life in the investment and finance industry and the story behind launching The Curve. Vic and Sophie are just so inspiring and they have created a really clever business in such a short time. In this conversation, I gained some invaluable insight and it was such a treat to get to pick Vic's brain one-to-one. I know you will definitely want to go and learn more about The Curve if you don't follow them already, so head over to thecurve.co.nz or follow @thecurve__ on Instagram for all sorts of amazing and clever financial education content. I know you will love my chat with Vic as much as I did. So, hi Vic, and welcome to my podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm going to start off by asking you to describe who you are and what you do.
Yes, so my name is Vic. I am co-founder of The Curve, which is an investing education platform for women. It's for women to learn everything about money, about financial well-being, independence, and it's in a non-scary or intimidating way and really just a safe space for women to come in and learn about money. So that's what I do. That's my day job. Yeah.
I'd like to give you a little bit of background. At this point in my podcast, I've started giving my guests a little bit of background as to how I've come across them, why I was interested in talking to them. And for you and for The Curve, it's twofold. First of all, I have recently become obsessed with The Curve as a punter, as a listener. And I mentioned to you before, I'm 44. I wish I had this 24 years ago. And I bet you hear that all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
And my relationship with money is, do you know, I'm a soph. I'm like, if you're going to be like Sex and the City characters, I'm like, I'm a soph. And it's me to a T. Like, I listen to her questions and I'm like, I am saying them in my head. Yeah. And I saw The Curve pop up, I think probably when you started, and I never listened to financial podcasts. I'm a creative. It doesn't interest me.
Yeah, fair enough.
Until recently, and then I can't remember what spurred me on. Something maybe a friend or something, and I started listening. Now I'm obsessed. I want to do the course in September. I listen every week. I'm Googling EFTs, all that kind of thing. I've put $100 into my Sharesies account. I did, and I actually interviewed Sonia Williams, the founder of Sharesies, maybe 2 years ago now. And at that time, I was like, I'm going to open, and I opened a Sharesies account, and I stopped straight away because I was like, now I don't know what to do. And so, as a punter, I'm just like, this is epic.
Congrats on opening a Sharesies account, because a lot of people, they do just listen and learn and they don't actually pull the trigger and do something. The fact that you've even done that, even if you haven't invested it, is
no, I've now, last week, put $100 in. So anyway, look, this is where the course is going to come in later in the year. So anyway, that's the first part, is just actually as a fan, as a new fan and someone that wishes I had it. But then, of course, obviously, I've got a podcast. I love podcasting. Mine is very much a passion project at this point. But you do see people in the podcasting world and people turning it into a business. And I know that a podcast is just a portion of what you're doing. It's not your whole business. But I've just, as I've observed from afar and watched your business and the two of you grow, I was just thinking about it and I was like, I should get you on, not just to pick your brains, but also just out of interest to see what you're doing, how you're doing it, and a little bit about your story. But yeah, that's the reasoning behind this chat.
Nice. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Okay, I like to start. I like to go back, take it back a little bit, get a little bit of an info about your background, where you're from, where did you study, what sort of jobs, what sort of led you to the point that you're at today?
So I was born and raised in Auckland in New Zealand, and went to school there, and then went to university in Christchurch. And I always had a really strong interest in businesses and how they operated. And I had a crack at starting a few of my own during school. Some weren't that very, they weren't successful, some were. I just always had this, I guess, drive to earn my own money. And I think my parents really instilled in me that if you want it, you got to work for it kind of thing. And yeah, it was, my parents were both working parents. And so it was just built in me that if I wanted money to go to the movies, then I needed to get a job. And I remember my first job was doing the paper rounds.
Yeah.
And I didn't earn a lot, but it was good. Yes. It taught me hard work and like actually getting out there and delivering newspapers. And then I worked in a cafe and stuff like that. And then I went down to study in Christchurch at Canterbury Uni. And I didn't really know a lot about finance. I didn't really know what it was. I knew it had some affiliation with numbers and business and accounting and economics and that kind of thing. And I really liked accounting and economics at school. So I thought, let's take this finance paper and see what it's about. And I remember sitting there in class one day and I was like, oh my gosh, this is like real world stuff. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff at uni where you're like, it's a lot of theory. And then we had a lot of real world examples. And I remember being like, there was an example, like if Boeing bought these aircraft, would you invest? And if this was the return on investment, I don't know. It was just like really real world company decisions. And I was like, I like this. And then continued it through uni. And then out of university, I got a graduate position at Milford Asset Management, which at the time was, so this is one of the largest funds management companies in New Zealand right now. And they've got about 160 staff, I think. But when I started, there was only 14. And so it was I was number 14. And I was answering the phones, I was getting the coffee, I was getting the mail. It was very start from the bottom up kind of thing.
But at that point, what was the job that you were going for?
I wanted to be on the investment team, and I didn't know Milford. It just started. It wasn't even that big. But I remember a friend of mine who worked at Goldman Sachs, and he was like, this is a really good company. Get your foot in the door, and then you can figure it out from there. And I think that's what I tell a lot of like young girls that we get, or young ladies that we get through the curve, deciding about a career in finance. I'm like, start working for the company you want to work for. If you show hard work and drive and passion investing, they can teach you the other stuff. You can learn the other stuff. It's more, if you're really interested and passionate, and I've learned this now throughout my career when I've had juniors or analysts looking up to working for me or that I'm managing, I can teach them all the numbers stuff. I can teach them that. I want someone that's like passionate, driven, and focused on investing. And so that was from day one. I was like, I want to be in the investment team. And they could see that. And because the company was growing so quickly, within 9 months, I was in the investment team. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is a whole nother kettle of fish.
And is that when you first get somebody's money?
Yes. Yeah. So you're managing money. Yeah. And so It was, I was an analyst at that time, so I wasn't actually managing the money, but my boss or my manager
was. That's real
was.
Money that you're talking yep. about. Yeah.
And you're making decisions about what to invest it in. So you're out there looking for companies. You're out there visiting a lot of management teams. You're literally out and about. And then you're coming back doing the research and figuring out, yes, this is a good investment. No, it's not. And so there was a lot of, you're turning over a lot of rocks. You're turning. Mm. And then you might find one and go, okay, cool. This is a really good idea. And so there was a lot of that, and yeah, got to meet some incredible companies, got to travel to some amazing places, and I was covering Australian, New Zealand companies just, and so then we opened a Sydney office, got to go over there and work in Sydney, and then came home, and then started at a different funds management company covering global companies. So that was, again, a lot of travel to Japan, Canada, the UK, like everywhere, trying to find companies to invest in, which was, at the time, awesome. A lot of the misconception is that you're sitting behind a computer.
Yeah.
Punching numbers in a spreadsheet.
Yes.
And I think I got told from my first days at Milford was that they were like, get out and have a look. Go and see these companies. Go see these management teams. Get in front of them. It's a lot of psychology as well, figuring out if a CEO is lying to you or not, or like getting nervous. And I don't know, there's a lot of networking, relationship building, which I didn't realize at the time. And yeah, it's great because you get to meet companies that you wouldn't normally meet in an everyday life. So that was really cool. And then my last job that I've had, I went from covering global equities, and we had COVID, and it just got a bit, there wasn't a lot of travel, there wasn't a lot of going out and meeting companies. So came back to covering Australasia and Australia, New Zealand companies again. So came full circle and then did that for the last couple of years, but started The Curve about 2 years ago. And that was really just because throughout my entire time, my entire career, I firstly noticed that there was literally no females in the finance industry. Even when I was working in Sydney and I worked in London, they are so few and far between. And
Even now, right.
Every job, every team that I was in, I was either the only female or the first female. And I didn't really notice it at first. I think I was so caught up with learning and experiencing what this job and this industry was like. And then once I got a bit more senior, I was like, hang on. And I remember meetings I'd be the only female, and there'd be like 40 men. And it was just like, I was like, oh my gosh, I've never felt like I'm privileged, I'm white. I've never felt like a minority as such until then. And I was like, wow, my gender is such a minority in this industry. And I was like, wow. And I was like, this needs to change. We as women make just as much money, or we're earning, and we're in the workforce just as much as men, yet we give our money to men to manage. And it just seemed this weird concept. And also another thing I noticed was just the number of my friends that were coming up to me throughout that time being like, hey Vic, I've got a bit of money in the bank, I know it shouldn't be there, or I want to invest, but I just have no idea where to start. I don't want to sound
stupid. Were you their go-to money person? Oh, yeah. That's our friend that works in money, so this is the only,
And I was pretty much the only one. I remember at dinner conversations, it would always be that my male friends would be talking to me about finance, and the females are off talking about something else. And I was like, this seems
so weird.
Wrong. Yeah. And so I wanted to change that narrative. And I think I was also searching for something, I think, of I wanted to have my own business and I wanted to work for myself. And so I think this was a great kind of coming together of my skill set, as well as having a bigger purpose. And I didn't want this to be an exclusive club. I didn't understand why everyone didn't know this stuff. Managing and growing your money is key to the life you want to live. And so I just couldn't fathom that people didn't understand, and had friends asking me, and I was like, how do you not know this stuff? Why am I privy to it and no one else is? And so that's why we set up The Curve. It was to change that narrative, really. And it's gone from strength to strength. Started as a side hustle, and now I've gone full time. There's obviously a massive need for it, and I'm gutted I didn't do it sooner, to be honest.
But it probably is the right time. I think from what I've learned so far, part of the success of this, there's probably a lot of it, but is your experience. And if you'd done it early, like, as soon as I heard, I think it is it 13 years or it's approximately that, straight away you're like, oh, she knows what she's talking about. Whereas had been 4 years in the fight, you'd be like, but, I don't know. I think you're just looking for a hustle. And so that's part of it, probably. Yeah. But yeah, I was just thinking, there's so many things to talk about, but I was listening today to your episode with Equity.
Oh, Pretty Mates.
Yes. Yeah. And they were talking about if you invest $100 a month for the next 40 years, was it?
Yes.
It would be $380,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
If you invest in safe, long-term investing. And I actually didn't know that was an option. Like, I thought investing was just putting it in shares and then the minute that the world crashes, you lose everything. And you just, it's pulling it out. I just, no idea. And you're so right. Like, it's just this.
Yeah. And it's crazy the number of people that think you need to have a lot of money to even start investing. And it's, no, you don't. You can start, and it sounds like, it sounds so cliche. It sounds like an adverb, but you can start from $1 a day.
And I guess that's things like Sharesies and
Kernel,
I think. And a few, they've all changed it as well. Because I think pre-Sharesies, I know a few investment kind of guys, but I thought that you had to have $50,000 to
and
do
And you did, because you had to give, have, fund managers usually have a $10,000 minimum, so you needed that to even get in the door with them. Whereas Sharesies and all those platforms have been amazing. And I think with us, it was like we were educating, and then the Sharesies was just ramping up. And then we were educating, and it was just, you know what, everyone can do it. And so it was... You know, it would be stupid if we were educating and then we're like, oh, but you actually need $10,000 to still invest. Right. So it was, yeah.
So tell me the early days of the curve. Now, I did go back and do some deep Instagram diving.
Nice, yeah.
In the early days, was it just you and were you just doing talks? How did the early days look?
So the early days were just me, but that was for literally probably about a month. And then I realized I do not know how to do content. I am a finance geek. I know how to write finance.
So you have this idea and you're like, I want to do this. I'm just going to get some women together and educate
I was
them.
In between jobs and I was like, look, I've got 3 months off. It's now or never. And I had literally had friends in my ear being like, you have to do something, Vic. You have to do something. And I was scared. It's scary putting yourself out there. I was like, I keep making every excuse in the book. And then I was like, you know what? Just do it. If it doesn't do well, nobody's going to care. Anyway, and so we just started with Instagram, doing some posts. What is a stock? What is compound interest? What is an ETF? That kind of stuff. And it was falling a bit flat. Like it wasn't doing that well. And then we started to do events. And we started, our first event was about 30 people. And then our last one before COVID, we haven't done events for a while now, it was 250 people. So it was like...
That just shows the need.
Totally. And it was just crazy. Like... Every event was a sellout and was double. We couldn't find a space big enough. And then our reach got beyond Auckland and beyond New Zealand. And we were like, you know what? In-person events, while we love them, because it's so awesome to get all these amazing women in one room, it is a bit exclusive when you've got a broader reach now. So we pivoted more to online. We started doing the podcast about 6 months in. So sorry, Soph came on board about a month.
Yes, I was like, tell me about that. Yeah. So you do your first event. It's successful, but you're like...
Yeah. And it was pretty much my friends. It was pretty much my friends that came along to support me.
But it was a paid event, that first one?
Yes, yeah. But it was through another platform that had there. And they just paid me a fat fee to come along for the guest speaker. And about a month in, I was like, so if I need some help with making this content interesting and digestible and relatable and people that stuff that people want to actually see and read. We went to school together, actually, and then we lived in Sydney together. And she's got a background in radio, TV. Like, she's worked on The Edge. She's worked at Kiss FM in Sydney, like big shows, producing them. She's worked on Survivor Australia. She's worked at Sony doing music videos. So she's very good at creating content that people want to watch and see and read. And she came on board about a month in, and I was like, hey, can you just help me make this cool and interesting? And she was like, yeah, sure. And then within a week, she was like, you know what, Vic, I think this could be like,
something.
Yeah, for her personally, who she's terrible with finances, and she won't care that I said that. She's getting
well.
Better.
That's kind of the whole premise of that. Yeah. Of the thing.
She's, you know what? I really could do with the curve, and I know a lot of people that will really benefit. And she was actually one of the people in my ear, being like, "Vic, can you please do something?" And so we were like, "Let's join together and let's do this together." And I think her creative brain and my finance brain coming together has made the curve what it is. And I don't think I could do it without her. She couldn't do it without me. It's very much, we are such different people and we have such different brains, but it works. And that's our bread and butter. And that's what makes us unique. And so I think, her coming on really made such a world of difference at the beginning. And then, we started a podcast about 6 months in. She was like, let's do a podcast. I was like,
do people listen to podcasts?
I wasn't a big podcaster, and I, bless Beth Miller, I just thought it was a bit of a fad. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like, let's see how long this lasts. Yeah.
And so we started doing it, and then we literally would just rock up into a studio down the road and just talk whatever was on our mind. We didn't have any structure or anything. And then about 6 months in, we got our first sponsor, and we were like, okay, we need to actually plan our episodes. What are we going to teach? It was quite a bit, but it was a bit more, let's try and make a go of this. And that was probably, so we've been doing the podcast for just under 2 years, so about 18 months now. And yeah, now it's our biggest income stream, and we've got nearly 500,000 downloads, and it's gone crazy. And I think, yeah, like you said, the dynamic between Soph and I, of her asking the questions that the audience wants answered and me teaching. And I also think our friend dynamic, I think if I got into a studio with someone I didn't know, I wouldn't know what jokes I could crack. I wouldn't know like how to push your buttons or like those little quirkisms. Yeah. And so I think that's really helped, is that we've understood how each other works in a conversation sense and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I pinch myself every day. I'm like, how does this work? I'm just talking to my best friend and getting paid for it, and people are learning, and we're getting amazing messages from people being like, wow, thank you so much.
And you're still talking about that thing that you love, like you love all of that. So it's actually your passion as well. And yeah.
And I remember when I left my last job, and the guys at work were like, oh, Vicky, you're going to miss being in the industry and what's going on. And I was like, no. I was like, I have to do that every day. I have to keep on top of what's going on and what the market's doing and all that. That's what I love. And I'm like you said, I'm so glad that I can bring that into my own business and educate and almost share my knowledge with women around the world. So yeah, how did I get so lucky?
Yeah, that's so cool. So did you guys write, I know you said you then after a while you're like, we could better get serious about this content. Yeah. And at what point did you write a business plan?
It's funny, like you just fumble along and then you're like, oh gosh, this is actually, we need to make this a company legally, like all those little things. You're like, gosh, this is actually serious. And I still have moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, is this this is what we're actually doing full time? Like, you have these aha moments anyway. But we did sit down with a kind of business advisor, because we just wanted an outsider's perspective of kind of what we should be doing. We knew what we wanted to do, but to be honest, if you'd asked me 2 years ago what the curve would be today, I would never have said what it is.
Things evolve, don't they? You have to be able to move and pivot and
Definitely. And so I think it was more just some accountability as well. Like, we have quarterly check-ins of, okay, have we achieved this? Like, and it's actually really good to have, because Soph and I are so in the business and we're such good friends and there's a lot of connections there. It's good to have kind of an outsider's perspective being like, no, you shouldn't do that. Well, he doesn't really do that. Yes. But it's more just,
someone that knows business that can bounce and give you advice and
And he gave us a bit of a plan of what we wanted personally as well as professionally, because it's so intertwined. And I think that was really good to have some direction, some kind of focal point to keep coming back to. Okay, like a mission statement and a vision and all that kind of stuff. Like, are we still doing what we set out to achieve? And keep coming back to that. And Soph and I have regular check-ins each week in terms of, are we still on track and are we keeping up with our KPIs and that kind of thing. So there is still that moving forward aspect as well. Yeah.
So you got sponsorship for the podcast in your first, what did you say? In
six months
in. Yeah. How did you know what to charge for a friend?
Gosh.
No, but where did you start in that point?
I think it was literally just, Sophie worked in the industry for a while, so she knew, and she knew a few people to ask, what are you charging? But again, we were so new. We didn't have a big following. And I think it was more of, you take a punt on us. And they were like, we can provide you with this and that. And so it was a bit of, it was with all our sponsors, we tend to call them partners because we do very much go beyond just an ad insertion in the podcast. Yes. You know, we do a lot of social creators around it, and we want the brands that we partner with to be, you know, brands that we actually admire and we enjoy and we use and that kind of stuff. And so Soph's very picky with, and it's funny, like in the early days, I was like, oh, let's just take the money.
Yes. Yeah.
She's, no, you don't want to be a sellout. Like, we can, you know, let's be picky. And so it was, in the long run, that's great. And so glad that listened to her with that. But it's, in the early days, it is a bit of trial and error. And then we had milestones to hit in terms of downloads. And then once we exceeded that, it was like, okay, now we should be charging more. And so it's literally a negotiation. And yes, sometimes we aim too high and they don't accept and vice versa.
It's such a broad world as well, podcasting, totally, because it's not just, it is about, you guys are like, in your instance, you've built a great presence,
yep,
outside your podcast. Yep. There is social, there is the podcast, there's other things, mm, as well. So it is, yeah, it's not, yep, just a X amount of downloads equals X amount per episode that, or whatever, yep, that you charge.
And Soph's, yeah, very good at making sure, like you can tell in a lot of podcasts, the ads that are just like, hey, this is brought to you. Like, yes, it sounds, yeah, so, yeah, inauthentic. Yeah. We want people to learn without realizing they're learning. Like for Aldi, for example, they sponsored the podcast, but they also helped us build a savings tool. And it was like, hey, want to know how much you need to save for a big ticket item like a car or a house or whatever? Use the Aldi The Curve savings tool. And so there was a lot of sending to the website and then getting the emails and then listening to the podcast. It's a kind of a whole roundabout circle of, I don't know what you'd call it, but yeah.
So as the business today, it's, yep, you and Sophie, what are your roles?
So, yeah, so we're both co-founders and directors of the business. I run the online course. I deal with, we're going through getting investors at the moment, actually, so I'm dealing with all that. So really coming up with content for the online courses. And then Soph does sponsorships and all the podcast editing. But cool, it's when we do the podcast, it's, I do the bulk of the work and the prep before the podcast. And then we go into the podcast and then her work starts after that. So it's quite good, a good dynamic from that sense. But we've started to have to divide and conquer with a lot of things because our time is just becoming so
it's too big. You have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas we used to do everything together and now it's right, okay, let's do our skill set. But sponsorships is her bread and butter. She is so good at that. I remember once I was like, when I just come full time and I was like, I'll help you. Let me take some of your load off your plate. I was like, I'll take this sponsorship. I'll leave this on with me. And it was a shoo-in. Like they were so right, keen. They were like they would be talking to them. Like they were like, yeah, we're sweet. This is, and I was like, we've got this. I pitched it. And then there was like an email a few days later, sorry, we're not keen. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And so bless her heart, she was like, it's fine. And I was like, I'm just going to leave that to you. I'll focus on something else because I'm like, we have such a different skill set and she is so good at it. And I think I take it for granted because I'm like, oh, sponsorship's so easy. Or it's, these creative ideas are so good. This is a no-brainer. But that's also in terms of her coming up with the creative in terms of how we're going to integrate their brand and our brand. And then, yeah, she's just very skilled at that. So I was like, yeah, I'll leave that to you. Yes. But I'm very much, I look after the finance of the business, which, yeah, is not surprising.
Yeah.
The accounts, all the legal side, all the contracts, like all that. That's all the boring stuff is me.
It really is the perfect combo, yeah, isn't it?
We do work, yeah, very differently. And I think her, from a creative background, it's like quite hectic. Everything's last minute. If I'm not feeling creative, I can't do it right now. Like all that, which is so not the way that I work. I'm very much, let's schedule in each podcast episode. Let's have a process. Mm. Let's have a kind of a plan in place. Mm. We have meetings scheduled. It's honestly like bread and butter, like the way we, yeah, work. And so there's been a lot of learning
socially, like, yeah,
how to work with different styles because it is very much, we are so different. And it's just an understanding of that we are never going to be the same person.
Yeah.
And yeah, we've both got the same goal in mind of growing the business. So let's just, yeah.
And I think it's clever to get that business advisor kind of roles, like, yeah, advisory right from the beginning because you do hear that a lot. Man, I've heard that so many times. Friends in business, really different working styles, yeah, and it can break friendships, yeah, and relationships, can it? But if you're aware of it, it's like the five love languages and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. If you know how someone works, then you understand, totally, and you can accept it. And
I think with us, because like my sister's got a business with her business partner, and if they have an argument, they go home at the end of the day, they come to work the next day, it's fine. Whereas the Soph and I, if we have an argument, we have to then jump in a podcast and pretend to be on and pretend to be all chipper and loving life. And that's not reality. And so we've had to really, and I'm not a big communicator, and she's really taught me that like, if there's something that's an issue or if we disagree on something, we need to nip it in the bud, move on, because it's going to be business damaging if we don't. And it's been such a blessing because even the littlest thing, it's like, you stole my chocolate out of the fridge. It's
like, okay, I love it.
Good to know. Yeah. Good to know. Let's move on.
Are there any episodes where you're actually
not angry. No, there's probably one or two, and she's been like late to the studio or something, and it's okay. Just say yeah. Like, but we have weekly. So it sounds corny, but it works. We have weekly if you and if yet.
Yeah.
What are we celebrating this week, and what really effed us off this week? And so it's really good. It's like the littlest things, and
it's so good.
It's really good, and most of the time, it's sorry I was late to that meeting, or sorry I said that, or sorry I didn't meet the deadline on it. Like, it's like little things, but it's just
what a healthy relationship. Yeah. I love it.
It's literally like a marriage. Good.
It's yeah, it's cool. It's your work marriage. It's great. Yes, and your friends as well. So it's important. Yeah. You've got the podcast, obviously, that we've talked about, and we mentioned before, and we've mentioned a couple of times, the course.
Yeah.
Is it, so it's one course that you run twice a year, is it? Or a couple of times a year?
We do it twice a year. We're just about to launch another one, actually. We'd love, so it's called the Curve Classroom, and we'd love to have a whole suite of different courses that run throughout the year. And so we're about to launch our second one on the 30th.
Is that
June.
In September?
Oh, no, June. 30th of June. Okay. Yeah. And this
where
is
have
kind
I got
of,
September from?
September is the investing one. That's our flagship one.
This is a different one in June.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're launching a new one, and it's a prequel to the investing one. It's for people that it's all well and good to be like, you should invest your money, but what if you don't have any money to invest in to begin with? So let's take a step back and let's get your finances sorted. We've got a really epic kind of personalized budgeting and spending tracker in there where you put all your transactions in from your bank statement, and it spits out where you're spending your money, and it's quite epic. And it's all just around, you know, what's got you to where you are today? What troubles are you in? Are you up to your eyeballs in debt? Okay, let's get you out of that. If it's you're spending more than you're actually earning, okay, let's get you out of that. It's called the Money Reset, and it's very much for people that are sitting there going, oh gosh, I don't even have money to invest, so I can't even do the foundations of investing. Let's take a step back and get your money sorted so then you can invest. So that kind of, it's more of a personal finance course. So yeah, and then we'd love
perfect
to do
time
one
to
on,
do that now.
Oh, totally. Like the number of people that are like, oh gosh, how am I supposed to split my paycheck between investing and saving and spending when my groceries are like through the roof and my mortgage payments are through the roof? But it will be interesting, to see how that goes, because it's our first kind of personal finance course. So, but it's a bit smaller than the foundations investing one's a 6-week course, and this was only 2 weeks, so it's a much more condensed version. But we'd love to have a whole suite of courses, one on property, one on crypto, all that kind of stuff would be really epic. Yeah.
And is events still in the business strategy, or is courses and podcasts the main two?
Yeah, it's where courses and podcasts. Mm-hmm. We would love to, we do a lot of corporate engagements in terms of talking at companies, and we get invited to events to speak, but doing our own events, it's not really in the pipeline. It's a lot of work doing an event.
And they're not as scalable, are they? That's
no,
the whole thing, and you're
but
limited.
Yeah. We would love to do a big annual event, like a girls' day out, like something where it's more invest for yourself, and it's more holistic, and it's more like sexual well-being, mental well-being, financial well-being, all those things that come into it in terms of nutritional well-being, personal confidence, like all that kind of stuff would be epic to do a big event like that once a year. But at the moment, we just got so much on our plates. Yeah. Gotta pick what we could do.
Is it just still you two at the moment, mainly?
Yeah.
So it's hard. Yeah. That's the thing. You've only got X amount of time.
And it's so much better now. Like when I was doing it and having a full-time job, that was just like,
oh man,
goodbye social life, goodbye.
Yeah.
But now it's a lot easier, but it's still your baby. So it's like, I want to work in the weekend sometimes, which probably sounds a bit unhealthy. But it's, if I don't work, I don't get paid. So it's, and I love it. So it's like this weird,
this is the time to do it. Yeah, seriously, totally. This is the time that you do it. And each different phase of life has its good points and bad points. But one thing about getting older, whether or not you have a family or whatever, is that responsibilities get different. And you'll never have this time again where you're a small, young business. Yeah, where you're both doing it all. So you just got to go hard and, it's cool. Yeah. So now, you left your job in, sorry, what did you say? A couple of months
in
ago?
In March. Yeah, March.
March. Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah. So what would a typical day, week look like for you? And I feel like we probably haven't said this on the podcast yet, but we're speaking from London.
Yes.
You guys, this is the beauty. You're both in Europe for 4 months.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is the joy of having your own business that you can work from anywhere.
Exactly. And I've been employed for 13 years and I never got the opportunity to live somewhere on my own terms. And as soon as I quit my job and I was like, you know what, Soph and I both love London. So we're like, let's go base ourselves here for a couple of months and see what, you know, can come of it. Yeah. So we're here for 4 months, but I guess a typical day, God, it's so different. It's so diverse. And that's why I love it. It might be a day we're podcasting or either prepping for a podcast or getting in touch with interview guests to be on the podcast. It's writing content, whether it's blogs, social content, or tripping away at the next online course. I do a lot of reading. Like, I love getting up early and reading the news, reading Bloomberg, the Financial Times, like all of that. So that my mornings are like scouring financial
news. And you have to. That's part of your job.
Yeah. And just like what's going on in the world and but also with a lens of what would our audience be interested in? Because a lot of it I might be interested in, or it's a bit overwhelming, or how can I break that down into something that's a bit more digestible? Or
do you, you're reading, are you just constantly writing notes and that kind of thing?
Sometimes, yeah. So we have a weekly newsletter and a weekly podcast. And so whenever I'm reading the news, I'm just writing down, like, it might be, I don't know, Australian interest rates. And then when I come back to write the newsletter, I'm like, oh, yes, that's right.
Work out later.
And so it's you're constantly pulling out things that people might be interested in. And we don't get it right all the time. Some stuff we're like, meh, boring. But it's, a lot of it is reading. And reading. Yes. I get sent a lot of emails from brokers and kind of people in the industry about what's going on in the world, newspapers, all of that. And then what other kind of content? I mean, it's, sometimes doing TikToks and selfie videos and all that.
And is that Sophie going to you, right,
you
need to do that, I need your content for this.
Yeah, and so we have a weekly, so last night actually we had a weekly content meeting with, we've got two girls that help execute the content for us and put it together. And that's just a really good brainstorm. The girls are a bit younger, and so they get different ideas. They're like, oh, my friend the other day told me that. She asked, how do I decide between living in the present and saving for my retirement? Like, I feel like there's this constant battle of, oh, I shouldn't be going out with friends or traveling, but then I want to because I'm young and I can, but I should be saving. She's like, it's constant. And so we're like, oh my God, great piece of content. Let's do a social post on that. Let's write a blog. And then we'll put stuff out there, or it might be a Q&A. Has anyone ever felt like this? And then if something really takes off, then we're like, okay, cool. Let's really flesh this out even more. Let's do a podcast. Let's interview someone who's an expert. Whereas if it falls a bit flat, you're like, okay, next. So it's this constant, and we get so many ideas from our audience in terms of, hey, can you do a podcast on this? Or hey, can you talk about this? And it's so good now we're at that stage, because it's like a self-fulfilling chain of events. And it's really awesome to see people coming to us with what they want us to talk about, discuss. And for me, I'm like, oh yeah, didn't think of that. And I'll go away and research it. But it's really coming up with content, whether it's audio, visual, written, all of that.
And the beauty is now you've got the time. Like, I just...
Oh, totally.
The joy of time. It's like the bane of my existence. Like the idea of 8 hours a day even. If you just do a normal work day, I get to work on this and I get paid for it. Like, it's such a...
And just like the business is valuable. Moving so much quicker now. Like, I remember being like, Soph would be like, hey, Vic, let's do an online course. And I'm like, okay, cool. It's going to take me like 6 months to write because I've only got the weekends or the evenings. Whereas now it's cool. Yeah, I can turn that around. It's just, everything's just a lot more quicker. Stuff's getting done a lot quicker.
Weekends and evenings, you're exhausted. So then the content's not as it, like, it is. And so, not everyone can just go full time into something, but you can just see how that just changes.
And I think when we had the business mentor, I think that was also key. He was like, look, okay, one of you needs to go full time now because this business is taking off. And he was like, I think there's an element of Vic staying in the industry and being more of an expert is actually quite good for the business. So Soph went full time first, and she was full time for about a year. And
were you like, oh, I wanted it to be me?
No. I was like, she gets to work on this cool business every day. And I'm like, But it was a slog for her, like working by herself. I'm off doing another job. It's a weird dynamic.
Totally.
But we couldn't afford to pay both of us. And then, but there was a D-day where it was like, okay, we need to get the business to a place where it can pay for both of us by this date, because that's when Vic's going to go full time. So it was quite good having those kind of, when I was talking about KPIs, like having those milestones in terms of, we really need to ramp this up because I want to go full time. Otherwise, we probably could have just kept chugging along.
Having those milestones, having those goals. I think it is really hard in your own business to set those, because you're like, if I don't do it.
Oh, totally. And before you know it, it's been a year and you've just been like, oh gosh, what did we, or we've just been you know, chipping away at the day-to-day stuff, but it's part of the day-to-day stuff. You need to set aside a lot of time during the week to, okay, how are we growing this business? What's the next step? Because you can get very bogged down in the day-to-day stuff, which is important, but it's also important to think about what are the next steps? How do we keep moving forward?
And holding yourself accountable to them and not letting them just go by if they don't get reached or...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So
what
would you say are the values and the ethos? We've talked a bit about this, but like the values and the ethos behind the Curve.
Yeah, I think it's, for me, I think it's about being honest and vulnerable. And I think there's a lot of podcasts, there's a lot of social media influencers, whatever you want to call them, that don't really resonate. And I think with us, and it's something I've had to learn because it didn't come naturally to me at all, but it was just about being vulnerable and honest. And when you're talking about money, that can be quite hard. It's talking about the fact that, oops, I spent, you know, $400 this weekend and I wasn't supposed to, or yes, I saved $100,000 before I left my job and that had to whip my ass off to do that. Whereas before, I would never have spoken about that, let alone to a community of a lot of women. But I think you create that rapport because everyone's situation is different. Everyone comes from different background, experience, privilege, whatever it is in terms of their money story and their money journey. And so I think just creating that open and honesty around, you don't all have to be saving the same amount, or it's okay if you have a blowout, and you know, it's, everyone's at a different age and stage. And so I think, yeah, being honest and vulnerable was probably one of the key ones, and being authentic. It was funny, like last night we had this, did this selfie video, and it was about how, you know, she was really struggling, how expensive it was in London. And she was like, oh my gosh. And she's like, I don't know how I'm going to go to Italy. And we went to Italy last week, and we didn't release the video, and she's like, I don't want to release it now because it looks, I was like, let's re-record it. And she was like, no, that was actually really raw and honest, and I don't want to come across as fake that I'm re-recording it, even though the time's passed now in terms of releasing it. I was like, let's just say I pre-recorded this rather. And I think that was quite, for me, I was like, that's so true. You don't want to ever come across as inauthentic, because it's so easy to see through that. And I think when you share a lot on social media and through the podcast, it's a case of that you have to have that honesty and that vulnerability and not be scared about it.
And so much of your brand is that you're doing it well. And I think that it, especially when it is a content is money, which, and finances, which can be seen to some as bland, there has to be something. And I think that is the thing, like, you guys are so open straight away. As soon as I saw the one where you talk about your mortgage, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm listening to that. And you do, or like Sophie saying she's got $50 left.
But see, when we first started, there would be no way that I would have talked about my mortgage, like,
right?
Absolutely not. And now it's, I didn't even think twice about saying the amount of my mortgage. I'm like, why? It's just like this weird, like, why is it weird to talk about how much money I owe the bank? I don't know, it's crazy how I've changed, but I took a while to get there. Like, I must admit, in the early days I was like, I don't even want to mention what I did in the weekend on the podcast, you know, because it's all that's my whereas now it's,
I'm always have been very open about money, lack of it, whatever, my whole life. And yet my husband is, and many of my friends are so opposite. I constantly am in trouble because I'll literally be like, so anyway, Andrew earns this and we've got this in the bank, and he will just be dying and be like, actually, I don't like it. There's some learnings there. But I'm like, it is a funny thing that it's such a taboo to talk about, but I just don't get it, because I'm like, but life is better when we're all honest.
I know, but it's like with sex, like, makes people uncomfortable talking about it, you know. It's like some people are really open to talking about it, and other people are like, oh gosh, I don't even want to talk about that. So it's, I don't know, there'll always be those people. But I think it's particularly for women, the more that we can create a conversation around money,
absolutely,
the more that we can talk about how to grow it and what we're invested in and help each other out, but rather than creating this cone of silence where we don't talk about anything and therefore we don't know how good or bad or how much help we need. And so it's it creates this world of silence, which is not helpful for anyone. So
no, and the beauty of your business is that ultimately you are working for the greater good, in the sense of educating and teaching women that it's such a powerful thing, and that in itself is a wonderful value or ethos to the brand.
And I'm like, you know what, if me getting a bit uncomfortable means that it's going to help another 10 women, you know, have a conversation around money, I'm like, you know what, that's absolutely fine. It's like I said, the messages we get is just like, especially with the mortgage, thank you so much for being open about how much your mortgage is. I'm like, oh wow, okay, I didn't realize that was an actual big deal for people, but it obviously is. And I'm glad that now it might help someone else talk about their mortgage and you know, that kind of thing. So
and I think actually what really does help is that you and Sophie are in different financial situations, because I think if it was two of you going, we've both had a career in finance and we've done very well, everyone would be like, yeah, okay. But you're like, I did this and this is what I did. And Sophie's like, I haven't done that, but how can I? Like, it's the balance of all of it. Having the combination, and that's cool.
Definitely.
Okay, so far, biggest highlight. What are you most proud of in this journey so far?
Good question. I think probably the success of the podcast. I think I was such a non-believer in the beginning, and now I'm just like, wow, it's crazy. It's, don't be scared of something you don't know. Do you know what I mean? It was like, I'd never done podcasting. I'd never listened to podcasts. I was like, I'm a bit skeptical. And so I think for me being like, A, just getting on board with it, and B, seeing how successful it is now. And I think what I love about the podcast is that it's free for anyone to listen to. And that was one of our biggest things when we started the business, was that we cannot go out there and say, everyone needs to learn this, but hey, pay $700 for a course. And so it was very important for me. And you talked about, you know, what's important in terms of the business and the brand. And I think another one would definitely be to always have a free product where people can learn. And it's okay to have a paid product. We're a business, we have to survive. But I think also having that free element and seeing it scale as quickly as it has really meant there's a need for it. And also, it would be one of my biggest milestones for the business, definitely, was seeing the ramp up and the scalability, and seeing that the audience is really liking what we're doing. It puts fuel on the fire. You're like, oh my gosh, I just want to do more and more. And it's like, it's like an addiction. You're just like,
it's so cool. I love it. And I love that, not being scared of something you don't know, because I think that's the thing. We do get it held back by stuff like that. So it's good.
And I think with Sophie and I as well, it's very much, I need to trust that she's an expert in her field. And if she's, we need to do this, or we shouldn't do this, or like, it's okay, I trust you. And vice versa with me. If I'm like, no, we shouldn't talk about this, or we should talk about that, like, it's, or we should do this, or the business should go this way. It's like trusting each other. And I think, it's knowing, not being scared of the unknowing, but also trusting each other in terms of, we've got a common goal here.
We've talked a little bit about this sort of thing, but one of my questions is, I'm always interested if there's been any kind of game changer moments or any specific examples. I don't know, did someone famous share a post or whatever? Is there anything that you're like, I remember when that happened?
Yeah,
that was a game changer.
I think there's been a few, and it's probably with guests on the podcast. Like, we had the CEO of Spark, one of New Zealand's largest companies, and I was like, oh my gosh, why does she want to be on our podcast? It was like, when people say yes to things, I don't know, there's always a pinch me moment of, okay, this is actually a business. I've got a bit of imposter syndrome and think this is just, so I still think this is just a little thing that we do on the side, and it's, one day it's all going
to
blow up.
You're like, I'll go back to my real job. And
So I think there's pinch me moments like that where I'm like, oh my gosh, here I am, I'm talking to the CEO of Spark, like in my house, in our studio, on our podcast. So things like that. And then we talk to Equity Mates, one of the OG, I have listened to Equity Mates, or known about them for years, like being in the finance industry. They were the OGs of kind of financial podcasts in Australia, and reaching out to them, and they're like, yeah, we'd love to be on your podcast. It's like, oh my gosh. There's been a lot of kind of pinch me moments like that. And then I think also just getting the brands that we're talking to at the moment in terms of sponsorship, their brands, like Audi, for example. Like, I have been obsessed with Audi cars for as long as I've gone. And I've driven what I remember buying, like the oldest version of an Audi, saving up my money. And I remember my dad being like, Vic, it's going to break down, it's going to cost you so much money. And I was like, I don't care. Anyway, and so I think for me, them wanting to spot, it's just kind of these things that come full circle. And then another thing also we do a lot of talks in schools, and going back to my school and teaching them about investing and what the curve is, and them, a lot of them knowing about it, was really like, wow, this is quite cool.
That's cool.
I've come full circle in the respect of, I'm now back at my own school teaching a young me. I don't know, it was just like this kind of had these moments.
It's special.
Like, oh my gosh. Yeah. And yeah, I think there's been a few moments like that where it's parts of your old life have come into your new life. And yeah, it's like a lot of that, which is really
And
special.
How cool that all of this is happening in quite a short space of time. That's amazing. That, you know, be really celebrated.
Totally. Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about various ways that you market the business. What do you, I'm always, because I've got a marketing background, I'm always interested in what do you think are your most successful marketing activities?
Yeah, look, we haven't paid for marketing. Like all, everything that we do has been organic content. And I think the biggest kind of marketing for us is having good content, whether it's getting a good guest on the podcast or whether it is something that we've said that's really funny or that a lot of people can resonate with and share with other people. You know, when we do a good podcast episode that people share amongst their friends, that's the best kind of advertising for us. You know, we did employ an advertising agency recently, and like we were paying them a bit of money, but and then we saw like the metrics in terms of a good month for us versus a good month for them, which is so different. If we can get it right, and it doesn't happen all the time, but if we get that content right, that sells itself.
Do you mean like actually you were fine just doing what you were doing?
Yeah, yeah. And it's that authentic, it's that authentic marketing if you get content right. If you get served an ad, you're okay, yeah, I'll follow them, but then you might disappear and you might get bored or you might not engage. Whereas if you're, if you find us interesting and you're learning from us or you find us funny or whatever, then you're going to stick there and you're going to engage with us. And therefore, in terms of a business model, it's much easier to then sell you something or help have you join our course or anything like that. And so it's really for us, it's like the way to expand that funnel, that reach, is just to keep creating new interesting content that resonates with different people. It might be a conversation on investing for kids, which might not resonate with some of our audience, but might reach a whole new audience. And so it's all about trial and error as well in terms of what works, what doesn't. But our best form of marketing is definitely just content. And that's that's up here. Like it takes, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes, you know, it takes a lot of thought and effort to get it right, but it pays off tenfold when it does, which is great. Yeah.
How have you found TikTok then? Do you guys, I feel like I'm such a Luddite, like such an old woman. What do you think of the TikTok? My other friends that have got a podcast, as soon as they jumped on TikTok, they just noticed quite a big jump.
Yeah, we've got a younger social media girl that we that contracts to us for a few hours a month and a few hours a week, sorry. And she is 23 and she effectively has to like hand feed us what to do on TikTok. Like we're such boomers, like it's crazy. Yeah, she'll be like, this is what I want you to say. This is, and even then I drag the chain and she's like, where's that TikTok? And I'm like, oh, I'm doing it, But I remember that with Instagram when we first started.
Yes.
I was terrible at doing selfie videos and I was terrible at doing it was horrific. Like I'd have to-
That stuff is practice, isn't it? You've got to just do it, put the time in,
And so, and I think when I see them, and I cringe out and I realize, okay, what do I need to do better next time? But yeah, it's honestly, it's, I hate saying it because I sound like my mother, but practice makes perfect. And it's very much, you just got to keep at it. It's like public speaking. I used to hate it at the beginning and now it's, it doesn't even faze
second
me.
Second nature,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, it's again, it's a scared of the unknown. It's, I don't want to, but you're right. It's, if you get TikTok right, the audience there is just way more. It is a very big can of worms that we haven't even scratched the surface of yet or haven't even opened. So, but yeah, if you get it right, then it can really make such a change and stuff can go so viral. But again, it comes down to the best marketing. If you can get content and you can get it right and it can get on TikTok and then it takes off, that's going to pay for itself a million times over. So it's, that's instead of paying for ads or paying for a advertising a magazine or a billboard or whatever, it's like if you can master a video on TikTok, that it's a no-brainer. But that's the hard part, is mastering.
Yes, it's mastering it. Yeah, totally. And my next question is around challenges, because obviously with all the good, there comes the harder parts of business, harder parts of life. And obviously also doing something like what you're doing, it's very public. Like people know who you are. Like you said, you're very open, you're very vulnerable, you share a lot, all of that kind of thing. Can you talk about any sort of challenges that you guys have come across in the couple of years that you've been running The Curve?
Yeah, I mean, we do. It's funny because we get so many lovely messages and so many incredible DMs on through our Instagram and emails that come through. And then you get the one that out of thousands or like 100 that isn't that nice. And it really rocks you. You're like, oh my gosh. And I remember...
That's it, we're closing the business.
Yeah, it's just really... And I think for Sophie and I, we very much know we have to help each other out there. And it's, you know what? Yes, they've said that, but it's also we've found it's usually there's something going on. I think we did something around ages ago, but it was about, I think it was like how to financially prepare for a baby. And I think there was something around breast milk versus infant formula. And it hit a nerve with someone and she got quite vocal. And then it was a case of unpacking and then replying in terms of, I don't know, there was a bit of a back and forth. And then she said, look, I've been through a lot. And it was like, okay, there's the understanding of like why it's not attack on us. It's something personal for her. And she's just reflecting. And so I think it was, it's understanding that if someone's upset, it's hit a nerve in something that's personal with them, not with us. And so if we're talking about debt and getting out of debt and credit card debt and someone rips into us, it's okay, obviously they might have had some really severe trauma around their finances. And so it's not take it personally, help dialogue with them in terms of helping how to understand what's actually the cause of this. So there's been a bit of that, but not much. Like in terms of our reach, I probably expected that we'd probably have a bit more.
Get more, yeah.
but it's only going to probably become more frequent the bigger we get. So it's something that we have to deal with. But yeah, in terms of challenges, it's probably what I said before around just the different ways that Sophie and I work, and I never want her to become me. I don't want to become her. Like the business is our difference and our unique dynamic, and so I think we need to realize our strengths and not trying to morph into the other one, but also figure out how to work cohesively. And yeah, and so I think that's probably been the biggest learning experience, and especially when I came on full time, because it was a lot more.
That's a new change. Yeah.
But yeah, we put things in place to make sure that we don't get any massive blow ups or hurdles or anything. But then I also think the regulation side of things is really frustrating in terms of what you can and can't say around investing.
Yeah, I was going to say there'd be a lot of all that stuff for you personally. I'd noticed that you can't give advice, which I get, because you also don't want to be doing that, because you'd be in a whole world of problems if you're like, hey,
but that's what people want. They want help. Yes. They want to be told what to do. And it's so frustrating when they ask you something and you give a waffly answer because you can't reply. And like events be like, okay, what's a stock that you invested in really recently that you really like? I can't even answer that. What's one of your best investment ideas? Can't answer. It's like all these things are just like, I'm not answering to be in pain. I literally can't. Like, and it's, I don't know, we've really come up against a lot of, just friction. I mean, the industry is so archaic as well in terms of financial advice. And it's, you know what, you've got this new age way of learning, which is a digital way of learning with people all over the world. And the regulator is very conscious of that. We're very close with them in terms of, this is what we're doing. This is the problem we want to solve. Help us out here. We're not cowboys. We're not trying to take people's money. Like I'm very much aware of what I can and can't do, but I need a bit of flexibility here to be able to help a ton of people who can't afford financial advice.
It's cool actually that you're in that dialogue. You are, you know, that it's
we've got
not
a mutual goal, we're both trying to achieve the same thing. Let's work together. Let's not be enemies here. And so I think they've been surprisingly, which I always thought that they were quite archaic, but they've actually been surprisingly responsive and receptive to what we're trying to achieve.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it's really good.
They're like, oh, here they are again.
Yeah. They're not going away.
Yes. Totally.
We may as well jump on board with them.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Cool. Who have been the biggest influences for you in your like work, your business, what you're doing?
Yeah. Probably sounds a bit cliche, but my mum, I think, very much instilled for me from a young age. She got me interested in investing. She bought me some shares when I was about 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know what what it was at all, but I was like, hey, this is cool. I've just get money in the mail. And it was a dividend check that I, and it started my savings. And, you know, if it was, I was very fortunate to have that front of mind at such a young age of kind of what is investing and how does this work. And then also her work ethic, just like I said before, in terms of if you want it, you got to go work for it, that kind of thing. So it was, I think having two parents that were working parents made me very driven and very kind of passionate in terms of, yeah, I guess my work ethic. I also think a lot of, like, all the women that we, that send us messages and stuff, if I'm having a shit day and then you get a lovely message through Instagram or an email saying thank you so much, it's, you're just like, okay, this is why we do it. And this is so inspiring and motivating in terms of just continuing to do it through the good times and the bad. It just makes it so worthwhile when you get messages like that. And yeah, even people come up to you in the street, and like, we had a meeting the other day in a cafe and this girl leans over, she's, oh my God, I listened to your podcast, thank you so much.
Cool. Yes.
And you're just, you forget, you're in a room with just the two of you talking into a microphone. You forget that it's like people actually listen and actually take on board what you say. And so I think when you get messages like that, it's like, it makes it, you're like, oh gosh, we have to keep going. We have to keep motivating. That's the kind of people that motivate me and influence in terms of what we do, definitely. Yeah.
That's so cool. Which businesses or brands do you admire?
Ooh, good question. I think, in our space, there's a lot of really interesting businesses. Like, there's Elvest in the US, which is a really cool business, very similar to The Curve in that it educates, but it also has this whole other element of portfolio management and financial advice and mentoring and coaching. And the CEO and founder of that comes from a very similar background to myself, in that she was a portfolio manager for years and then saw the same issue that we did and decided to change that. And so they've built that into a very successful business and got investors on board like Melinda Gates and some very high profile names. And so I think for us, it's, we haven't even scratched the surface. Not that we want to copy them, but it's more like, you know what, there is such demand for this. And the US is a whole other kettle of fish in terms of investing and regulation and all that. So I think, that's definitely one. Yeah, there's definitely one business that we, they just keep kicking goals. But all the other businesses in this space, like, there's so many financial education podcasts or platforms, and it's so awesome to see, because when we first started, I was like, oh, we don't want to get in touch with them, they're our competitor. And then I've never really experienced a collegial kind of uplifting, I don't even know what to call it, but if we reach out to them, they're more than happy to help put us in touch. Like, it's just like everyone's got the same idea and wants to achieve the same thing. And so it's, let's help each other rather than hinder each other. And so it's awesome to see, whether it's these platforms in Australia, the UK, and New Zealand, there's so many that it's just, we're all helping each other out here. And so I think it's quite interesting, because there's a lot of that tall poppy syndrome in New Zealand, but we haven't seen that at all. I think it's very much the opposite in terms of, in business sense, in terms of, I'll be on your platform, you'll be on mine. So it's just, let's cross-pollinate, let's try and change the world, as cliche as it sounds.
Yeah. No, it's cool. Yeah. And you know what, doing on a smaller scale, doing what I've been doing, I've talked to some pretty amazing women that have had some pretty, have got some pretty awesome businesses, and I'm constantly blown away by the generosity and vulnerability of people to share, and just no one owes anyone anything. But
if I can jump on your podcast or someone else's podcast and even reach two other people, that for me is okay, cool. Yeah. It doesn't even have, like, it's, I think that's how,
and
I
it
think
all
about
works,
it,
like you say, for the greater good, and it's all part of that. Everyone's actually in the same game. We're all working, selling something, or not selling something, that sounds probably a little bit more cynical than what it is. But like, everyone's on the wheel of doing something, and it's working together, and people being generous and kind with what they've got is just, you can, it's the mark of good
and
people.
And it's like karma. Oh, you never know what's going to come back, or what you're going to get out of meeting this person, or what it might lead to. And usually the meeting that you think is probably the least important, or is usually turns out to be one of the best ones. So it's,
totally. Okay. Best business advice you have received, or best business advice you'd like to pass on?
Was probably when I was young, and it was all about just like embracing your uniqueness. Like, I tried to be like everyone else in terms of in the finance industry, tried to be like all the old men in my team and work like them, think like them, whatever. And then I remember having this light bulb moment and realizing, you know what, I don't have to look and be like everyone else to add value here. And I think I was like, oh, I wish I'd known that so much earlier on in terms of like my confidence and in terms of just, embrace your uniqueness and don't try and be like everyone else because everyone else is taken. And so
it's great advice. I love that. Okay, you've talked a bit about this already, but the future for the Curve, where are you heading?
Global domination.
Go. You're in London.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to grow our reach over here and in Australia. We've got a big reach in New Zealand, but also don't want to forget about our bulk of our audience. So we're definitely not forgetting about them, but it's more about growing. The stuff's universal. It can be someone in the UK can be listening just to someone in Invercargill. So we can teach the stuff no matter where you are. And I think we'd just love to continue to grow, like I was talking about, that funnel, just grow that funnel, and then we can add on those products later. But it's really just reaching as many women as possible. And I think that's our kind of our goal and our ethos, is that every woman needs to learn this. And so if it's not resonating with you, why not? And how can we make it? It's trial and error in terms of what's going to be the trigger point for you. It might not be the trigger point for someone else. And so we want to hit all those nails on the head and just keep producing interesting content that hopefully reaches more and more women. Yeah,
cool. Have you got any plans to do any, are you going to do anything like London or UK specific while you're there, like in terms of events or meetings?
Yeah, we might do an event. We were actually talking about it just yesterday, actually, how it would be quite cool to do an event here while we're here. But yeah, we'll do some kind of UK specific podcasts and some UK founders of businesses and stuff like that. Definitely.
Great.
But it's more of an 80-20 rule in terms of 20% will be focused on the UK, but 80% still based in New Zealand and Australia, definitely.
Yeah. And actually, there's such a wonderful network of Kiwis in the UK that meets both worlds a bit,
you know? So many Kiwis doing epic things over here that we'd love to get on the podcast. And so definitely.
Cool. So outside of your work, what brings you joy? What are you passionate about?
I love spending time with friends and family. I've really had to, specifically this year, and we're only 6 months in, but I've really had to focus on spending quality, dedicated time with friends and family. And I think when you run your own business, you can easily get into working all the time, or there's always work to do. And so I think it's, for me and my own kind of mental health, is around, okay, when I'm with family, I'm with family. When I'm with my friends, I'm with my friends. When I'm just by myself, I'm by myself. I can't be constantly feeling guilty about not spending time on the other thing. And so for me, definitely spending time with friends and family brings me joy. I love exercising, just love waking up early in the morning and having a coffee and having that kind of me time. And love going for walks with my dog as well, definitely. But that would be my... And reading. I read a lot.
Okay, cool. So what does success look like to you, personally, professionally, or both?
Good question. I think for me, success, it sounds cliche, but is around happiness. And I think happiness comes from having freedom and choice and flexibility to live your life how you want, which for me comes from money. So in that respect, it's not money buys you happiness or money makes you successful or whatever, but it's, I think, having enough money, and that would be different for everyone in terms of being able to live your life how you want, whether it's being able to take time off and go on holiday with your family and spend time with them, and that brings you happiness. And that's, for me, that's considered success. If I have made enough money to have that flexibility in my choices and live the lifestyle that I want, then for me that is that's success in life.
And it's just on that sort of idea, like I think for some people, and myself included at different times, even just not having fear over knowing when you're reeling cash constantly and you know you're doing it, and you know you're not being clever or wise with it, and there's a lot that comes. So it's like, I get what you mean. It's not like money brings you happiness.
No,
but actually, there's so much around money that we are caught in, and when we have clarity, and
a lot of people might be like, oh gosh, she sounds like if she's got money, she'll be happy. Or she's,
I don't think that sounds like.
I think it's because there's this connotation that money, if you want lots of money, you're greedy, you're a bitch. Like, you're not a nice person. It's like, you're selfish and all this. And it's, you know what? No, there's actually a flip side of money that means I can give to my favorite charities. I can, you know, take time off work to go spend time with my grandparents or my grandma who doesn't have long to live. Or I can actually go spend time in nature with my dog and actually improve my mental health. Or like money buys you time or buys you...
And freedom, like you freedom. Say. Yeah. And that's the thing. And freedom to go to the supermarket and not worry that it's going to decline. Or it means a lot for a lot of people.
Which means you can sleep better at night, which means that you can be a better person the next day.
All your mental health is better. All of that, that's cool. I like it. I really like it. Hey, so that's the end of all the big questions.
Yes.
I still feel like I've got a million that I want to ask you or grill you about or whatever. But I love what you guys are building. I've really loved observing it from a business perspective and, like I say, as a punter. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you guys do with The Curve as a business. But I'm also looking forward to the financial freedom that I will have from my investments that I am soon going to be growing my portfolio. Thank you so much for sharing so openly about the business, about your journey, everything. I love it. I love hearing about it. And I'm really inspired.
Easy and fun conversation. So thanks for having me.
There's one little final bit, which is my quick fire faves. Yes, just a quick part, but I just like this part because, again, I'm nosy. So, three items you could not live without.
Coffee, my puppy, my dog, who's actually in New Zealand at the moment, and probably my phone, which sounds terrible.
But from a business and a connection standpoint.
Now, this will be an interesting one from you. Which app for business and or life do I need?
Yes, good question. An app that's around or one that I wish was around?
I don't know. Tell me one that's around, but one that you...
I think for me personally, I think I just love Spotify in terms of listening to music. And for me, music really changes my mood a lot. Like in terms of whether it's exercising or whether it's... working and being on a focus playlist in terms of, I just think I don't know what I'd do without Spotify, to be honest, in terms of I just love listening to music. One that I wish was around, which you probably think there is a lot around out there, but I think they just really haven't hit the nail on the head, and that's having a kind of net wealth personalized money management app where everything's in one place, and it's a combination of budgeting, it's a combination of your investment portfolio. It's kind of everything. It's almost like a Facebook, but for your money and your finances. And you can people can interact and they can talk and say what they did. You know, you can share photos and videos. And it's just, a social media app for money would be great.
Now, could you, as the regulations, if I was went onto Facebook and was like, hey guys, I invested in Air New Zealand and I did really well. Is there regulations around that even for Joe Blogs?
So if someone, say you did that and then someone else, so Jane was like, oh, awesome.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to invest in that and lost heaps of money. Then she complained that you gave her advice. Then yes, you could be held accountable, but the likelihood if you've just got a few followers, and it's unlike, but if the bigger your following, at risk you are of someone thinking that it's advice without you actually saying go and invest in New Zealand. If you're like, I have invested, and they consider you an expert and therefore take that as advice, then that's also so you got to be very careful.
What is the difference, another side question, what is the difference between the Sharesies, the Kernels, are they all the same kind of thing but just different investing platforms?
So Sharesies, you can buy partial shares, so you can buy half a Microsoft share or something, which is great, and that's why you can invest such small amounts. With Kernel, I don't think you can buy individual shares, but you can buy funds, so you can buy ETFs, which is like exchange traded funds. You can buy different funds, but again, it's a platform as well, so
there's other platforms as well, isn't there? Because I'm at the beginning of the, I've seen
Hatch,
that one.
There's lots of them out at the moment, and there's a lot of international ones coming down to New Zealand as well.
Do you learn about those in the investing course? the different
about all the different the positives and negatives of each, because some shares these you can invest New Zealand, Australia, and US shares. Hatch you can only do US. Lots of different nuances in there as well.
I was thinking that because I was like, I've got my little shares these, but then I was like, what's Kernel? And then and then I was thinking, oh, actually, I wonder if that's covered. So that was just a personal side note. But okay, what have you watched lately that we must see?
I'm embarrassed to say this, but Selling Sunset. I'm like,
oh, yes.
It's terrible. It's trash. I know. And I feel like I should say something way more educated, but sometimes I just need a real mind.
You've got to have your downtime. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
And I just love how, I love how outrageous it is and how it's just such terrible reality TV.
It just goes like with it before you know it, you've watched the season and you're like, what have I done with my life?
Definitely, also that was
good. Okay, when we're in Auckland, where should we go to eat or drink? But also you could also do London, but it might be too soon.
I'd say in Auckland, anywhere on Ponsonby Road. I just love, like, I live quite close to there and I always wander up and go. I probably eat out way too much. But there's so many good restaurants on that street. Yeah, that would be my
That's your go-to.
Anywhere along there, yep.
So you talked about Spotify. What are you currently listening to? What should I add to my playlist?
I'm listening to a combination of probably like pop music. Love some really upbeat, fast-moving music while I'm exercising. And then the complete opposite when I'm working, I listen to a playlist called Deep Focus, and it's like it's like slow somber music, but it gets me very much in focus mode, in work mode, so it's stark contrast.
I'm actually looking for some work focus, so I might try that. Do you listen to other podcasts? And I know you said you weren't previously much of a podcaster, but are you now? And do you have any podcasts you like?
The only other podcast I listen to really is Diary of a CEO by Stephen Bartlett. I just find his guests that he gets on is so fascinating. And you learn everything from gut health to sleep health to mental health. There's just so many interesting guests. And I think he has a really good way of kind of getting out from them what he wants the audience to listen to. And I think it's, and I love at the end he does what's one question for the next guest.
Yes, it's quite good. And, yeah, I like that.
And they don't know who the next guest is going to be. And if you could call, you make one phone call before you die, who would it be? You know, all like real poignant questions. And I think it's such a good way to tie in the next episode.
Clever. Are you a foodie? What's your go-to recipe that you like to cook for yourself or others?
Probably tacos, which sounds like such a basic
meal.
But I always feel like tacos in terms of fish tacos, chicken tacos, tofu, throw some salad, wrap it up and eat it. I'm a pretty basic cook. I do a lot of my food bag and those kind of meal kits because I just come home and I'll either order Uber Eats, which is super expensive, so if I've got a meal kit and dinner ready, then I'll just do that.
And final question, and you mentioned you're a reader.
Yes.
What should we read next? And do you read fiction or is it only financial tense?
It's only non-fiction. I read the odd fiction book. Maybe I should read more fiction, but I love non-fiction. I just love learning stuff.
Yeah.
And whether it's an autobiography or whether it's a self-help book, whatever, I love non-fiction. Yeah. I'm actually reading a book at the moment called Better Than Before, and it's all about creating good habits. And then the other book that I love, which is I want to read again now and I've read it three times, is Atomic Habits. I just think there's a lot of kind of similarities with investing in terms of the compounding of a good habit and the compounding of investing. And I think there's just so many good things that there's all things that are relatable to investing and managing money. And so I love that book. Another one is While We Sleep by Matthew Walker. Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. It's just frightening how important sleep is. And I'm a stickler for my 8 hours.
Are you? Okay, I'm the opposite.
Which is hard in London because it's like we're working different time zones. But I think that book just really scared me into, and he's actually been on Stephen Bartlett's podcast, but just around, how alcohol, how caffeine, and I love coffee, so obviously haven't been listening to the book too much. But and how jet lag and all and sleep deprivation and mothers and just like how impactful that is on your life. And so I think it was just quite an interesting read from that sense. And
yeah, I felt like I would read that and be like, oh, I've got so many things I've got to change. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Hey, that's it. Thank you so much. Like I said, so great to hear your journey. Loved chatting with you. Yeah. Go and enjoy glorious London today.
Thank you.
I miss it.
I will.
Cool.
I will.
Hey,
thank you.
Nice to talk to you. See you.
See you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. I would love to hear what you think about the podcast. And if you wanted to tell your friends about Super Creative, I would just be ever so grateful. If you'd like to keep listening, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if you wanted to rate and review, that would be amazing. For more information, find us at Super Creative Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Bye.